I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Championship Roundtable podcast. I'm your host, James Vickers. You can reach us on the show on our Twitter page, which is at Championship Pod. And you can also follow me on my personal Twitter page, which is at _ James Vickers.
Hello, I'm Simon Pickup. I'm the editor of the Tarhurst End, a Reading blog and podcast as well. We cover everything about Reading. You can find us on Twitter at the Tarhurst End, and you can find me on Twitter at Bucks Royal.
Yeah, cheers for joining me today, Simeon. We're going to do two episodes over the international break, focusing on our guests and how their teams sort of have got on for the season as a whole and how they sort of see the rest of the season going. Obviously, I wanted to get you first on, Simeon. We're recording this on the Wednesday, and obviously the main news coming out of today is the news that Jaap Stam's no longer with Reading. Sort of first of all, I wanted to ask you, were you surprised by his departure? And sort of second, were you one of the people who were sort of backing Stam to stay, or were you sort of firmly on the side that wanted him out?
I guess the decision to sack him really isn't surprising at all, considering how bad we've been over the last couple of months. One win in our last, I think, 19 matches in all competitions is unacceptable form at any level, to be honest, at any standard. So it's just surprising that he's lasted this long. What really is surprising is the timing of it. We've only got about 8 games left of the season to save our championship status. We're 3 points off the bottom 3. So it gives a new manager a really tall order to come in and change things around, really stop the rot and get some new ideas into the team in such a short time. And you've got to question the owners, what are they trying to get out of this? Are they really expecting a new manager to be able to keep us up? They're not hugely experienced in English football in terms of making these decisions. They've only been in charge of the club for just under a year, so it just makes me think that they've made an inexperienced, pretty poor decision to sack a manager this late, to be honest.
Yeah, obviously you mentioned there 8 games to go and you're sort of just above the relegation zone. Obviously, after sort of the success at last season, sort of narrowly missing out in the playoffs, were you expecting sort of Stam to take the club forward this year, or has this season sort of come as sort of no surprise? Sort of how have you viewed sort of the last sort of 12 months really of Jaap Stam's tenureship before he left?
Well, when he came in at the start, there was a lot of talk of a 3-year plan of him coming in and revolutionising everything in terms of the playing style, recruitment, youth development, all of that. And we were expecting to have quite a bad season last year and then slowly build up this season and then next year after that. So it's very surprising to see us get to the playoff final last year. That kind of completely messed our expectations. We were expecting to be probably battling against relegation or maybe mid-table. But considering how well things went last year, we were really hoping that we'd really push on. We got some new owners in, 2 Chinese billionaires. We thought we were going to buy some really good players and really strengthen the side and push on from that third place finish. But in the end, everything that was good about the team last year, in terms of being consistent, mentally strong, being able to just grind out wins week in, week out, we haven't been able to do that this year. And it's surprising. There's a lot of different factors in terms of how shaky the recruitment has been. The morale has been low for quite a while, and Jaap Stam just seems to have lost his touch in terms of tactics, in terms of firing up the team to be able to get them to win games. So, yeah, it's hard to get my head around it. If you ask any Reading fan, to sum up how the season's gone, everyone will give you a slightly different answer. Some people will blame it on a lot of external factors behind the scenes, things like recruitment and how unstable the club's been over the last couple of years. Other people will put it squarely on Yapstam and ineffective tactics and him trying to do too much with players who don't really know how to play this system, this Dutch total football.
Yeah, you mentioned there, obviously, sort of the issue with firing up the players and players not being sort of suited for his system. Obviously, the sort of next appointment for Reading is absolutely key. Do you expect them to bring someone in the interim sort of for the last few games of the season, or would you expect them to sort of take a bit of time over the international break and then sort of get the new man in with the intention of sort of building for the next couple of years? Who would be your sort of ideal candidate at the moment that had come in and do the job?
I don't know what to expect, really. You'd hope that they've got someone lined up, that they've been hopefully talking to someone for quite a while and they're ready to make a quick appointment, because that's really important if we're going to stay up. We need, well, every day possible for a new manager to be able to come in and get their tactical ideas impressed on the squad. But there's no clear answer, to be honest. Some people will say we should completely scrap this tactical style. We should go to something more direct, something more basic, something that we can rely on a lot more. Other people will say we need a bit more gradual change away from what we've got. The candidates that are out there at the moment, people like Paul Clement, even seen Steve Cotterill named, which I really don't want to see happening. There's no one clear style that you can detect from the candidates. There's no sense that the owners want to carry on this style of football or go in a completely different direction. So it's going to say a lot about what they want, really. I'm going to get more worried the more time goes on between now and the appointment, because, as I said, every day counts now if we're to get in a good replacement.
Yeah, obviously, sort of until the international break finishes, I think we've got about a week and a half, so sort of that Easter weekend sort of period is really crucial. Sort of looking a bit further past that, how do you sort of see the rest of the season going for Reading? Would you expect them to have enough sort of about them to stay up? Obviously, there's teams like Sunderland and Burton who are really struggling down the bottom. Do you expect to sort of stay clear of that and then hopefully start your rebuilding process sort of fully next season? Or are you fearing sort of the worst really for the rest of the season?
I think I've got to fear the worst, to be honest. They've left it so late with the sacking that you wonder what kind of impact a new manager is going to be able to have. Really, if they can come in and get 3 wins or so, get about 6 to 10 points, it could be enough when you consider how bad the other teams have been. Sunderland have been awful. You've got Barnsley and Birmingham City down there as well. So you'd hope that a couple of wins should be able to do it. But the momentum, the downward momentum has been so profound for such a long period that you don't know if you're going to be able to turn it around in that short time. And if this club does go down, it's going to be it's going to hit us really hard, particularly with things like revenue and keeping our Category 1 status for our academy as well. So it's a big couple of months for the club.
Yeah, obviously, sort of big couple of months ahead. Hopefully, you know, next time we have you on, you've got the new manager in. Obviously, I'd expect you to. I wouldn't expect you to wait more than sort of a week or so to get the new manager in. And, you know, hopefully by then you've sort of managed to turn it round and, you know, sort of pulled clear of safety. So the one thing as a Preston point of view that I'm worrying for is the fact that we play you in. I think it's about 2.5 weeks now. So I can see a new manager coming in, having his little honeymoon period and really disrupting our playoff plans. So from a selfish point of view, hopefully that doesn't happen. But obviously, I know from your point of view, you'll be eager to get those points on the board as soon as possible and then start to look forward rather than back. With that, though, we're out of time on this short interview. If you'd like to let everyone know where they can find you again and sort of any projects you're involved in, you know, now would be a good time.
Yeah, I'm the editor of the Tyhurst End. You can find us on Twitter at the Tyhurst End, and you can find me on Twitter at Bucks Royal.
Cheers for joining us, Simeon.
It's all right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Championship Roundtable podcast. I'm now joined by Russ Goldman, the Fulham representative that we have on the podcast. Cheers for joining us, Russ.
Thank you, James, for having me, and I look forward to speaking to you about Fulham's season so far.
Perfect. Yeah, before we get started, if you want to sort of plug any sort of Twitter handles, any projects you're involved in, you know, feel free.
Sure. You can actually follow me on Twitter at Russ_Goldman, and also for my podcast, which is Cottage Talk, a podcast all about Fulham Football Club. You simply can go on Twitter at Cottage Talk, and you will find the show Twitter account there. And you can also listen to the show on Apple Podcasts and also on the TuneIn app. And on top of that, you can listen to it on the Stitcher app.
Yeah, cheers for joining me. It's really been sort of a season of two halves for Fulham, sort of as the old saying goes. And, you know, thankfully for you, you've sort of turned it round and saved me blushes. I had you and Sheffield Wednesday tipped to be sort of the two teams in and around the top of the table at the start of the season. So thankfully, one of them has at least kind of come true. Sort of talk us through, obviously, the first half of the season where you were sort of in and around mid-table, and then sort of since the turn of the year, really, obviously it was building just before that, but since the turn of the year, obviously you've been on this fantastic run. Sort of talk us through the season as a whole, and where was sort of the moment in the season where you can sort of pinpoint, if you can, you know, where the season really started to turn in your favour?
Sure. Well, the first half of the season was definitely a disappointment. And if I can go back to the origin of that, I would have to say before the season began, we started seeing some speculation that there was something going on with Tom Kearney, and that he was dealing with a knee issue. And it turned out to be true. He had this knee problem, and he tried to play with it, but it was pretty obvious that it was bothering him, and he'd be missing matches a decent amount throughout the season. And the way that Fulham play, really, he is what everything has been built around. I can fairly confidently say that. So when you don't have a fully fit Tom Kearney and you don't have him playing in several matches, it's going to affect you. You think you can manage, because Fulham squad, I thought at that time, at the beginning of the season, still was good enough to have a really good start of the season. And it just didn't work out that way. Instead of getting victories, we were getting draws. And many of these draws would be happening late. And not all of it goes to the Kearney injury, but I think that is a portion of it. And then, of course, we brought in a new player to play, I guess you could say, his position, which was Oliver Norwood. He's done a good job. He did a very good job in the first half of the season, but he's not Tom Kearney. So we were just trying to figure out how it was all going to work. And we also had Sone Aluko leave, and then you had someone take his place. So it sounds like little changes, and then, of course, at left back, you have Scott Malone leaving. So you have these issues, and I think it really affected how the beginning of the season went. So for me, everything really started to change as we got to, I guess you could say, the holiday months. That's when we started to change our season around. And it's hard to put my finger on what changed it. Again, having Tom Kearney back helped, but it was more than that. I would say, just finding ways to win. All of a sudden, we were just finding ways to get all 3 points instead of drawing. And I remember doing an episode of the Championship Roundtable. We were kind of at the crossroads at that point, and you were asking me how many points we needed from a certain amount of matches, and I said 9, and we ended up getting 10. And that turned out to be the turning point, and that was right around the end of the calendar year and the beginning of this year. And it just took off from there. But where we really caught fire is when we get to January. The three acquisitions in January really have taken us from just a team that could be in the playoffs to a team that could potentially contend for second. We'll see if that all plays out. But the three additions in January just took us to the next level.
Yeah, obviously you mentioned the three additions in January. You know, you brought in someone with a lot of championship experience in Cyrus Christie. You know, obviously he's been at Derby for quite a while and, you know, knows the division inside out. Obviously Matthew Target as cover for Scott Malone, who I remember you saying at the sort of the first half of the season that you were still short in that position. Obviously,
yes.
You know, the emergence of Ryan Sessegnon really is, even though he played well last season, I think it's been his real breakthrough year this year. Obviously, I know you've said sort of countless times you see him playing further forward. So obviously there was the rumours there with Sessegnon going. People, you know, put sort of one and two together and thought that Target was going to be a direct replacement, which obviously, you know, great for you. You kept hold of Sessegnon. But I think the real sort of key over the last sort of couple of months, and, you know, Preston sort of felt it the hard way, has been the signing of Mitrovic. Is
right.
That obviously at the start of the season, you were saying that you thought you were sort of a forward short as well as the left back sort of issue. So you addressed both of those in January. Is that really sort of helped add that extra dimension to your game now, having Mitrovic in particular?
Absolutely. It's funny because I've said on the show he was the missing piece, and he just fits very well to how Fulham want to play now. And it goes back to the season prior when we had Chris Martin. Chris Martin could be that focal point, and the way Savisa plays, it really works well, you know, with players running and him basically either taking it himself or getting other teammates involved. We've been missing that for a long period of time. We played, you know, again, within this Slavica style, but we were missing that striker, that focal point. And that, you know, if we wanted to, you know, kick it up to him and then let him distribute, he holds up the ball very well. And as you have found out, unfortunately, James, he can score. And he really has been able to take us to that next level. But I don't want to diminish the importance of Matt Target either, because Matt Target, you and I have talked about that. I knew he was coming in for a couple of reasons. One, because they were really missing that style of left back with Scott Malone. Now you have that with Matt Target, and he's actually very good defensively. And that also allowed Fulham to play Ryan Sessegnon further up the pitch. It was really a domino effect. So when you bring in Mitrovic, it helps you score goals. And then, of course, you bring in Target, and he helps you score goals, but he also solidifies you defensively. He gives you, I guess you could say, a two-way left back where he can be very offensive, but he helps you defensively. And then you have Cyrus Christie as your right back as an option. You know, and listen, you happen to see that in the match against Fulham versus Preston. You got to see it when he came off the bench, took the place of Ryan Fredericks, and he made a difference. So we have that as well. We have cover now at several positions, and Christie could be a valuable piece as we go forward. But the top two would have to be obviously Target, and number one has to be Mitrovic, because now it's basically like an engine that now everything is firing on all cylinders. And I'm very thankful that Tony Khan, Slavica Jokanović made this happen. Bring him in, because he really has made a huge difference to what Fulham are doing right now.
With eight games to go, obviously, the top two look like, sort of, as much as I've said over the past few weeks, I thought you could catch them. I think they sort of are picking up the points where they need to, and they do look like they're going to be sort of the top two come the end of the season, sort of barring any, you know, disastrous collapse over the last eight games. I think it's more than safe to say, you know, again, unless you had a major collapse, which I can't see happening, that you'll probably be in the playoffs. How do you see the last eight games going from a Fulham point of view? And obviously not an exact points prediction, but
sure.
How would you expect you to finish? And then obviously, how would you rate your chances going into the playoffs?
It's interesting because, yeah, you actually mentioned to me, and I didn't want to talk about James. I didn't want to talk about second, but you kept dragging me in. It was like Godfather 3 with you. But I understand because Fulham were on that great run. They still are, you know, even though we got the draw against QPR, we still have this undefeated run, which is tremendous. It really, it's wonderful, but can it be sustainable? And that's the question, because we went through our probably most difficult part of the season. We just finished. It actually finished with playing your team. That game was really what we thought was going to be the hardest part. Of course, then you play a West London derby, and that's always going to be hard. But we saw the six-match stretch is really the pinnacle of how difficult it could be. So I'm looking at the last eight matches for Fulham, and I'm not saying they're going to get maximum points because that would be crazy for me to say. But I see the points being dropped at a very small amount. I could see them losing a match and maybe getting a draw or two, but that's it, because the matches are there for them. Honestly, they could easily, not easily, but they could win all eight, or they could drop points, lose a match. I can't see them losing more than one, and then getting a couple of draws. So with that said, I think that they're in probably good position to end up either third or fourth. That's where I'm thinking they're going to end up. I'm not thinking about second at this point. If that was to come into play, fine. But if I'm being realistic, third or fourth seems to be where they are. And then we can talk about the playoffs. And what I hope, because I do think they're going to get to the playoffs, is that they learn from the mistakes of that they ran into last season. And what's funny about it is that QPR showed and reminded me and reminded Fulham supporters of how difficult Reading was last season. Because if you can press Fulham and don't let them play the ball out from the back and you make things difficult on them, you can get to them. And that's exactly what happened in that second half. So my concern, honestly, in the playoffs would be who we face. It's going to be a matchup issue. If we're facing a team that plays like us, I think Fulham are going to be fine. If they play Aston Villa, I think they're going to be fine. Middlesbrough, I think, is a challenge, but I think we can beat Middlesbrough. If we play Preston North End again, it's going to be a tough one, my friend, because you know how to play against us. So when we get to the playoffs, it's going to be about the matchup. Who do they get? And then we can take it from there. But that's kind of the way I'm looking at it, James.
Yeah, I sort of couldn't agree more with regards to playing sort of Villa and Middlesbrough in the playoffs if you did get them. I think the way your team sets up is, you know, perfect to play against them. And, you know, hopefully Preston can make it into the playoffs. And, you know, it's sort of the bad thing, I suppose, about doing this.
I don't want to face you, by the way. And I'm being very serious. I don't want to face your team because I know that you would give us everything that you had. Because you have a very good team, a very impressive team. I was very impressed, even though we beat you in that match. You just showed a way that that Fulham can be beat, even though you didn't win the match. QPR showed it too. There are ways to beat a team like ours, and you know, we hopefully will learn from that.
Yeah, definitely. I think you know, it's the bad thing about doing this the podcast that obviously, you know, you get to sort of talk to fans from other teams and you want them to do well as well. But when it gets down to the business end of the season, you know, you can afford to be a little bit selfish for your team. So sort of speaking to people that we do, you know, on a week to week basis, you know, I wish your teams all the best for the remainder of the season. But from a selfish point of view, if we do manage to sneak in, you know, I'll be firmly on the Preston side. But with that, Russ, we're out of time. Thank you for joining me today. You know, it's a pleasure to have you on as always, and no doubt we'll have you on in the very near future.
Thanks very much, James.
Welcome back to the Championship Roundtable podcast. I'm now joined by Rob, who is the Barnsley fan who obviously represents them on the podcast. Thank you for joining me, Rob.
No bother at all. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Perfect. Yeah, if you want to let anyone know where they can reach you, any social medias or any projects that you're involved in, feel free as well.
Yeah, I'm the editor of Tykes Mad. You can find me there at www.barnsley-mad.co.uk. And you can also follow me on Twitter at 21tyke.
Perfect. Yeah, cheers for joining me, Rob. Obviously, we'll start with sort of reviewing Barnsley's season sort of as a whole. Obviously, 8 games to go. But sort of the season so far, obviously, I'm guessing it's not materialised sort of how you hoped. What's been your sort of overall feeling for the season so far? Are you sort of disappointed with it, or is it how you expected the season to go?
I think it's probably gone as expected. We looked at the recruitment we made in the summer, and I mean, no disrespect to these clubs, but signing players from Forest Green Rovers, Luton Town, players coming in that had not even been tried at the Championship level before. Obviously, we lost even more good players in the summer, like Marley Watkins, Josh Scowen, Mark Roberts, players that had got us promoted and had got us into a respectable league position last season of 14th. But I mean, we started off not too bad. We had a good run sort of between about September, October. We picked up a couple of wins, a couple of draws away from home at big clubs, and we were like 7 points clear of relegation. Since sort of like the start of December, though, it's been appalling, really. We've won, since the 4th of November, we've won one game. That was at Sunderland. We were probably the worst team in the division. That's only two games. We just won at Birmingham as well the other week, but it's... You know, their team's sort of below us. I think I was actually looking before I came on the podcast just to actually look at our record properly. And so far this season, we've won 7 games, which seems fairly respectable for a team battling relegation. But then you look, 5 of those wins have come against the 3 teams below us. So basically, anyone not in the relegation zone, we struggled to beat. The other wins were in August. We beat Nottingham Forest, and we won at Millwall, I think, in September. And they're the only wins in. I think the only way we're going to stay up this season is if the 3 teams below us continue to lose. I think we need them to save us, because I can't see us saving ourselves at the moment. It almost sort of resembles the last time we went down in 2014. I saw something put on Twitter the other day, and it proper summed it up. It said that it stunk like 2013 to 14, and it does. It feels exactly the same as it did then. You know, players that are not good enough. I'm not saying they're not trying, because they probably are trying. They're just not good enough. Some teams are coming out like that. We had Millwall at the weekend, who, you know, no disrespect to them, but they only came up last season and they were so much better than us. You know, the quality on the ball, the passing, the movement, the chances. We're just not good enough. And like I say, the only way we're going to stop up is if Birmingham, Burton and Sunderland continue to lose, I think.
Yeah, obviously you mentioned there the teams below you, sort of picking up wins against them. Obviously, what has really sort of derailed your season sort of even more is obviously Heckenbottom leaving for Leeds in February. How was that sort of received with the fans? Was it sort of a departure that you expected, or did it come as a bit of a surprise?
It wasn't an expected departure, to tell you the truth. He only signed a new contract he only announced the signing of a new contract a few days before. He claimed he'd signed it a couple of weeks before. But at the time, not many fans were that bothered. We were on a very, very poor run. I think it was 1-18 when he left. So I think some of the crowd were starting to turn a little bit on him anyway, and he'd openly flirted with the jobs during the season, like Sunderland and Nottingham Forest he got linked with, and he was sort of not denying that he'd be interested. But we've not really been derailed by it. We've just continued on that same theme. But the sort of concern I'm sort of seeing from the last few games is that, at least when Heckenbottom was here, the players weren't good enough, but they knew what their jobs were. They weren't particularly great at them. But the defenders knew where they needed to be, midfielders, strikers. Under this new guy, this Jose Moraes, it's players are out of position. He makes 5 changes every game. No one seems to know what they're doing. So, you know, even though we weren't on the greatest run of form under Heckenbottom, the club seemed to be a bit more structured, a bit more organised, whereas now it's no one seems to know sort of what their role is in the team.
You know, you've got the new manager in now. How has he sort of fared since Heckenbottom left? Have you noticed sort of a turnaround, or has it just been more of the same, really? And how would you sort of see the last sort of 8 or so games going in the season? Do you expect to stay up, or, as you mentioned earlier, is it a case of sort of praying the teams below you sort of continue on the bad run of form that they've been on?
Well, under the new guy, Jose, I think arguably it's got worse. Like I say, it's at least we were bad before, but we were sort of an organised bad. Now we're just so disorganised. Like at the weekend against Millwall, we had Ollie McBurney, who arguably is the most informed striker in the Championship at the moment. He just won the Player of the Month award for last month, and he was playing him on the left wing. He got some like 6 goals in 7 games, and on the left wing, we've got fullbacks that don't know where they're meant to be. We are on the other wing. We had Mamadou Thiam, who was built like, you know, like a brick outhouse, and he's positioned out on the wing. Out and out wingers that we've got at the club can't get in the team. So it's gone even. I think it's gone progressively worse since Jose took over. I think he's been in charge now for about 6-7 games, and in 2 of them we've conceded in the first minute. I think I looked up the stats the other day for the website, and we've conceded in the first minute it's like twice in the last 7 games, and that's like the same amount as we've done in the previous 183 games or something. So we're starting off appallingly. I went to Middlesbrough the other week, appalling in the first half. And at least with Heckingbottom as well, he used to be on the touchline, trying to like cajole them on. Jose seems to stand there for the first about 5 minutes and then disappears into the dugout, and you never see him again. So I don't know. I mean, he used to be a coach for Mourinho, but he seems a bit of a fraud at the minute. And I mean, his record as a manager has not been great in the past. So it sort of stinks a little bit of, you know, foreign owners coming in, picking a foreign coach, which you see happen quite a lot, you know, in English football these days, and it not working out. In terms of the last 8 games, we've got some really, really tough games. Next up is Bristol City. We're fighting for the playoffs, so they're not going to lay down. We've got Nottingham Forest, who nothing to play for, but on a very good run of form at the minute under Karanka. We've got Sheffield United, again, pushing for the playoffs. Haters anyway, so they're not going to lie down for us. I think we've still got Brentford to come, who are a very tough team. I personally can't see where the next win's coming from, which is a worrying thing. We just don't even look like winning. If we go 1-0 up, we've gone 1-0 up a couple of times under Jose, but as soon as we go 1-0 up, then he puts everyone back and we sit and defend for the last 60 minutes or whatever. We're not good enough to do that. We're not good enough to hold on to a 1-0 lead. So, like I said before, it's going to be one of those, hopefully, fingers crossed, one of those three teams below us keeping us up. The win for Birmingham at the weekend was absolutely catastrophic for us. You know, we're back down there now just on goal difference, just keeping us out. I honestly think it's going to be League One football next season. I was actually listening to your podcast at the weekend. I think you had the two Sheffield lads on.
Yes.
And they were saying about, you know, how they thought it would be Barnsley that would drop in. I was nodding my head listening to it because I can see Birmingham doing a bit of fight now, and we're just not good enough. That's the be all and end all. Those players aren't good enough, and it's, you know, it's just unfortunate. I mean, I could go out there and play for Barnsley. I wouldn't be good enough.
Yeah, thank you for joining us today, Rob. If you want to follow Rob on Twitter, his Twitter handle is @21tyke. Rob also writes for a Barnsley fan site, which is barnsley-mad.co.uk. So definitely check him out. And I'm sure we'll have him back on the podcast soon. Welcome back to part 4 of this special Championship Roundtable podcast episode. In this section, I'm going to be joined by Louis Shackshaft. Louis, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. It's a strange one, because obviously I'll be asking you the questions now. I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan, but let's talk about Preston North End, shall we?
Yeah, I feel like all of a sudden I'm in the hot seat now, so I'm going to throw it over to Louis, and rather than me interviewing myself, Louis's going to ask me a few questions about sort of the remainder of Preston's season and how I see it going.
Yeah, it's going to be like Mastermind, this one, so make sure you don't get any questions wrong, mate.
Because, yeah, definitely.
I bet a lot of your followers are relying on you this time, so shall I just kick it off? Question one, mate, are you ready?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, first question, obviously, Preston are doing really, really well this season, so understandably, I'm guessing you're really happy with Alex Neil's first season in charge, so what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, definitely. I think when Simon Grayson left in the summer, as I've said sort of a few times on the podcast, most Preston fans were fearing the worst, really. You know, he left us on the first day of pre-season, I believe it was, which, you know, any club that had happened to, you know, straight away sort of signals disaster. So for Neil to come in and not have a full pre-season and to be working with someone else's squad, you know, he's done fantastically well. The first 2 months of the season, I'd say, really to set the tone. You know, we were up in and around the playoffs, sort of where we've been for the majority of the season. The only real sort of speed bump, I'd say, in his first season in charge was the injury crisis we had sort of late October, November, where four of our, I believe it's seven defeats this season, you know, came in consecutive games, which when you've got sort of 9, 10, 11 first team players out injured, I think any team in the division had struggled. So to bounce back from that the way they have, you know, it shows a real forgiveness about the camp, and Neil's really embedded that in the players. There's a real sense of, you know, the team as a whole playing for the manager. There's no sort of individuals in the team or sort of star names or anything like that. We are quite a small club in the division, you know, a division filled with the likes of Wolves and Aston Villa, Sheffield Wednesday, you know, these big name teams who have been in the Premiership multiple times before. So for him to come in with someone else's squad, as I've said, and you know, give us a real crack at the playoffs this season, you know, it's gone better than I think most Preston fans would have expected.
Can I ask, obviously, when before Neil came in, what was your expectations? How did you think Preston would have done this season prior to him arriving?
I think under Grayson, obviously, he did fantastically well for us, getting us back into the Championship from inheriting us in League One. I think the first 2 years we finished on exactly the same points and exactly the same position in the league in 11th. And I thought, you know, probably more of the same this season. I think with Grayson, if we'd have finished 11th again with the teams, you know, in the division, the money that's floating around, I would have said that is, you know, somewhat of a success for us. But, you know, you can only be content with that for so long. So I think looking back retrospectively now, Grayson moving on and Neil coming in, it's kind of worked, you know, both ways, really. It's worked in a good way for us that we've got Neil in who, and it's not a knock on Grayson, I do believe out of the two, Neil is the better manager. You know, we've got a better manager now, a manager who's a bit more, I'd say, high profile in the division. So sort of the drawing power of players wanting to come and play for him and encouraging players that we do have already to sign new deals, that kind of thing is sort of working in our favour now, having Neil in charge. So I think he has taken the club sort of a step on since he came in. And, you know, you said sort of how did I expect the season to go under Grayson, as I said, probably mid-table again. You know, under Neil now, I think the sky's the limit for him, really, with the squad he's got. Obviously, I won't expect us to, you know, make a push for the top two anytime soon, but I do think, you know, inheriting a squad that isn't his to challenge for the playoffs, it's really exciting to see that, you know, where the rest of this season will take us. And then, you know, potentially next season, if we don't go up, I'm still highly doubtful that we will, given a full pre-season and a full summer transfer window, how Neil can develop the squad and you know, ultimately take us forward into next season.
Yeah, definitely. I've been impressed with Preston this season. And I think, you know, Neil's made a tight unit there and they're playing some really good football. Question for you, though. Obviously, Jordan Ugill departed to West Ham. As it doesn't seem so, but from your perspective, has it been a detriment to the team or of the continued pushing forward even more so without him?
Yeah, I guess I ask this question quite a lot when I sort of am either on someone else's podcast or sort of doing like writing pieces. And I think the best way to sum it up is that it was a move that was successful for all parties, really. Obviously, you know, it's a shame to lose Ugill, who was probably our best striker at the time. But, you know, to deny a lad who we signed from non-league football, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, the chance to go and play in the Premier League, you know, in a stadium like West Ham's week in, week out, you know, it'd be unfair of us to sort of hold that back. It probably is for him, you know, once in a lifetime move. So always grateful for the job he did for us. You know, he always gave 110% on the pitch, and he was always the player that came off, you know, covered in the most sweat. He wasn't afraid to put himself about. So I have no problem with sort of his time while he was here. There was a few fans that were a bit disappointed that he handed in a transfer request last summer, but, you know, it's a young lad who's had his head turned, and, you know, he admitted that he's learned from those mistakes, and, you know, hopefully in the future he doesn't repeat sort of something like that. But then, obviously, to benefit Preston, we got Sean Maguire back a couple of weeks later. And, you know, I said at the time when Ugill left that as good as he was for us, I think the players around him suit more to play in a different way. With Ugill, at times, there was that over-reliance to go long because he was so good in the air. Whereas now we've got Maguire, it brings players like Barkhuizen and Robinson Alan Brown in particular, you know, has been fantastic since the turn of the year when Hugill's gone, getting in and around that number 10 role and, you know, creating from sort of deep and pushing forwards. And I think with Maguire in now, it gives us a different kind of sort of threat in attack. He's, you know, he's come back from this injury. I think he's got 5 goals in 4 games, which, you know, for any striker to come back after 4 months out is absolutely fantastic. And I think now we're seeing a Preston that play, you know, more attacking football as a result. You know, we've got a lot of pace down the wings. Maguire's a quick lad himself. And, you know, it's really exciting to watch. Not to say it wasn't exciting with Hugill up top, but I think we've evolved the way we play. And I think ultimately going forward, that's how Neil would like to set us up, with sort of a small sort of number 9 striker who can run the channels and run in behind. And, you know, as I said at the start, I think he's benefited both parties perfectly.
I'm a fan of Maguire, and I'm glad you've mentioned him. Do you think since Hugill's departure that Maguire's had to step up a gear, if that makes sense?
Yeah, definitely. I think in the first half of the season in particular, before his injury, Maguire was, you could see there was a player there. I think to play him and Hugill, because Neil's obviously not a fan of a 4-4-2, and I don't think it suits sort of the players in and around our midfield. Maguire was been sort of pushed out wide onto the right or wide onto the left, and you know, you're still doing well chipping in with goals and assists here and there, but you know, you could see that he was sort of wanting to play down the middle. So for him to play down the middle now, you know, he's really stepped it up. He's come back from injury, and it looks at the moment, obviously I don't want to tempt fate, that he is, you know, single-handedly firing us towards the playoffs. You know, the rest of the team are playing well, but you know, Maguire is sort of head and shoulders above everyone else at the moment. And, you know, if he can continue this form between now and the season, you know, who knows where we could end up.
Yeah, I mean, Preston, you know, without wanting to put your club down, that they're overachieving this season, and not, I'm not going to say that in the limelight, but a lot of players are getting noticed. Do you fear such as Maguire and Callum Robinson and Tom Barkhuizen, do you fear they might be looking at potential moves or big clubs are going to come in for them in the summer?
Yeah, obviously, as you said, we're not one of the biggest teams in the division, and I'm always the first to admit that. So with that success does come, you know, sort of interest from bigger teams. But the thing that sort of struck me with this group of players that we've got at the moment is the sort of the real togetherness in the squad. As I said earlier, there's no sort of real egos or, you know, players who think they're bigger than the club at the moment, and they seem quite a tight-knit unit. So, you know, hopefully, you know, the players want to stay and continue to buy into this philosophy that Neil's bringing to the club. And sort of the real good thing for us is the fact that, you know, we're in a position where we don't have to sell players at the moment. We are one of only 3 teams last year who actually made a profit, you know, sort of on a monthly basis in the Championship. The other 2 actually went down, I think, were Wigan and I can't remember the other team. But, you know, that's fantastic in itself. All the players that we've got, you know, the players like Maguire, Barkhuizen and Robinson, Alan Brown, Ben Pearson, are all on long sort of deals. I think the only 2 players out of contract in the summer are John Welsh, who hasn't really got a look in this season. So, you know, he's been a great servant for the club. It'd be a shame to see him go, but, you know, you can't live on sentiment. And I think his time at Preston is coming to an end. And the other one is Paul Gallagher, who for the most part looks like he's going to sign a 1 or 2 year extension. Obviously, he's getting on a bit at the moment, but he's a player who loves the club. He lives in the area. He's got a family settled here. So I think for him, you know, I can see him staying. But yeah, as I've said, with the rest of the players, we're in really strong position for the first time in probably the last 10 years, where we don't really have to sell players. And if we do sort of get to a position where players want to leave, we can command, you know, really what we want for them with them bidding contracts. So I'd like to say that we can keep the core of the squad together, but, you know, if they do move on, we'll get some money in. And, you know, we've shown in recent years, sort of Preston as a whole, that we are quite shrewd in the transfer market. And I've got every faith that, you know, the management and the sort of the higher ups can reinvest that money in the squad sort of wisely.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like you mentioned there, Preston are renowned for buying players on the cheap as such and improving them, making them better and selling them on for a bigger fee. But one final question for you, and the biggest question of the night, in fact, the biggest question of the season for you, James. Do you think Preston can make the playoffs? And if they were to finish 6th or wherever they were to finish in the playoff spots, can they go on to win it?
It's a difficult question. I think with my sensible head on, I think this season we might just be a little short. I think, you know, Derby, who, albeit they're on sort of a bad run of form at the moment, you know, have the squad depth to ultimately turn that around. I think Villa and Fulham, you know, look absolute locks for the playoffs now, unless there was, you know, a dramatic sort of decline in their form, which I can't really see happening. The only question mark really is Middlesbrough for that sort of last spot. You know, they've been a bit inconsistent, but again, with Tony Pulis, he's starting to turn that around for them. So, you know, to get into the playoffs, we've got 8 games left. I'd say we probably need to win 5 or 6 of those to even stand a chance. The one thing that we do have going in our favour, and obviously there's no easy games in the Championship, is that out of the chasing pack and Middlesbrough, we do look to have the sort of air quote easiest or most favourable running. Our hardest game, I'd say, on paper is Derby at home. And, you know, I'd fancy when we play well, as we showed with Wolves and Aston Villa the other week, on our day, we can give anyone in the division a game. So I'd like to think we can get a result out of that game, especially with the sort of the poor run of form Derby have been on at the moment and the injuries they've had. The only other real tough game between now and then, and I do think that it'll probably come down to this game, is our second to last game of the season is away at Sheffield United. So I think that really is going to be, obviously we use the term 6-pointer more so at the bottom of the table, but I do think that that could be a real 6-pointer going into the sort of the last round of games, where we have Burton at home, who, you know, unless they sort of rediscover their form, probably will be down by then. So, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see over the last sort of few weeks. I think sensible head, I think we'll just miss out. I think we'll improve on our 11th place finish last season. I think we might be a point or two just shy. I think ultimately those draws will come back to cost us. You know, we're in a way, I think actually Sheffield Wednesday, the second closest to us with draws this season. So I think they could come back to haunt us a little. If we did get into the playoffs, you know, never say never, because it's knockout football at the end of the day. And, you know, it's who turns up on the day. But I do think that out of everyone in the playoffs at the moment, Fulham are the team to beat. But, you know, having said that, we gave them a real good game at Preston the other week. And unluckily for us, you know, Mitrovic, who always seems to score against us, managed to pounce up in the, I think it was the 91st minute and steal the point. So while I do think we'll probably finish short, you know, the playoffs, as everyone says, they're a lottery and, you know, it can go either way. It doesn't necessarily follow form as it's sort of shown in the last few seasons.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. I've summed that up there. I think most fans across the country who are neutral would love to see Preston in the playoffs. I certainly know that. Like you said, though, I think there are a couple of teams a bit stronger than you at the minute, like you mentioned, Fulham. But also you mentioned the playoffs are lottery. So if they did get in there, then who knows? Miracles do happen, I suppose. Leicester won the Premier League and Huddersfield managed to do it last season. So thank you for answering my questions, James.
No, that's absolutely fine. Thank you for coming on and asking me them, so I didn't sit and basically talk to myself for the last 10 minutes of the episode. So it's much appreciated.
No problem. I'll chat to you soon.
Perfect. Cheers for joining me, Louis. Before you go, if you want to let anyone know where they can sort of find you on any social medias, feel free.
Yeah, so if you want to catch me on Twitter or visit my website, it's just my name for both, at Louis Shackshaft or louisshackshaft.com. And I'll be on the podcast soon enough, I'm sure, over the next week or so.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're going to have another episode out in a few days' time, and Louis will be stepping in and asking the questions to the rest of our guests who come on. So, you know, definitely check that out when it's out. Cheers for joining me today, Louis. And as always, you know, follow us on our Twitter page, which is at Championship Pod. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, my personal Twitter is @_JamesVickers. But with that, we're out of time. I hope you've enjoyed this sort of special episode. Give us feedback as usual on Twitter, and we'll see you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.